Hello.
Hello, welcome back in.
Yeah, no, I know I've been it's been a minute since I've been back in the chair or the couch, I guess is a better way to describe it.
Back in the old fainting couch, back in the old chaise longue.
Thanks.
How have you been doing?
I've been better. Specifically, I've been trying to use BetterHelp. I don't know if you've seen like a lot of podcast guys who definitely are getting great help with their mental health problems have been promoting it where it's like it's kind of like therapy but like in an app.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Are you seeking this out supplementally, or am I getting replaced
I
here?
yeah, like I guess like in theory it would work as a great supplement. But I just kind of end up going down these rabbit holes with it, like, oh, I can get a therapy session from like, Henry Ford or like Gandhi or like, all these famous historical figures are there to talk about my problems with me.
That maybe sounds like a different app from BetterHelp, but I won't get in the way of
I
your story
mean,
here.
I it's I mean it works basically the same way, a computer or a very good facsimile of a computer tells me the things that I want to hear it say, but it's from a place of perceived authority, so I take it more seriously than if it was just like, I don't know, like someone else saying it, like some random schmuck, because it's from my phone and I trust my phone.
That's true. I mean, it's pretty fair to trust, your phone. Artificial intelligence. I mean, intelligence is part of the package. It's you're getting smart, sound advice.
Yeah, I mean like it's what could be smarter than like a computer? Like it has all of the information in the world of it, and there's no absolutely no room for human error at all with a computer.
That's absolutely true. I've never had any computer problems before.
There's no human biases that are folded into it. There's no gamification. I do find it weird that sometimes I have to play Subway Surfers for 5 minutes or watch about 10 minutes of ads, like about 30% of which are in Spanish, in order to continue my session. But I think that just really diversifies, the process. And I'm earning Imturk dollars as I do it.
Oh, there you
Well,
go.
Imturk pennies. I haven't quite made enough for a full dollar yet.
It's we got to start somewhere. You got to scrape by with what you can.
Yeah, but I was kind of really inspired to give, a digital therapy assistant a try, by a little movie I watched recently.
Oh, what movie could that be?
Her st no, Megan.
Megan!
Megan, or as they're calling it on the streets, M3GAN.
Mithrigan.
Mithrigan.
Oh my god. Yeah, I saw that. I heard about that movie. I saw so many GIFs and little clips on Twitter. Was she slaying? Was she like
She
slaying and serving?
was child slay.
Whoa!
She actually was like basically Cunty Chucky.
Yeah.
It really did just kind of give us the Child's Play forced femme reboot that we deserved but did not get with the Aubrey Plaza one.
Yeah, that's very, very true. I mean, well, I think that's kind of a good place to start talking. There's how this compares to the new Child's Play versus to the Don Mancini Child's Plays, because that new Child's Play with Aubrey Plaza and Brian Tyree Henry, both actors who I love so very, very much, was a fucking dog shit movie, which was not good. We reviewed it. It wasn't good, very
Yeah.
good.
Oh, it was atrocious. It was I feel like that was the last big Stranger Things movie I saw. Like that was the death knell for the well, besides the like fucking last season of Stranger Things, which apparently was like just 8 movies. But no, that was like the death knell of the like trying to capture the lightning in the bottle of It Part One, which It Part Two couldn't even capture.
Yeah. This is definitely, would you say this is much better than that remake that?
Oh, absolutely. World leagues better.
Yeah.
How it compares, I would say I like it a little more than the mid season of the Chucky series, but not as much as the originals or the like newer, like the last two new ones.
Yeah.
And I'd put it about even with the TV show.
Yeah.
At its peaks. The problem is the TV show at its like lows is just kind of a drag.
Yes.
But it is as good as the TV show when it hits its stride. I do like Cult of Chucky a lot more though.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in total agreement there. I think that like the new Don Mancini Chucky movies, like you know, and for the most part the show, like you said, it can be kind of sucky, but I think
the show hits like the Ryan Murphy problem of just like, I don't care about these little gay boys. Boo! Boo! Not because they're gay, but because they're boring. I don't care about their boring little drama. Like, show me the funny doll.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm back and forth on that one, but like, I don't know. It could be more. It could be juicier. It could be it could be something that is more kind of in service to the people who are going to come watch the show. Although I think narratives about like being very, very young and very queer are very cool in theory. But yeah, but now we have Megan as a sort of almost response to kind of the continuing Child's Play legacy.
It really is like that. And also like, kind of, I feel like, a response to Annabelle, even, which is also from the James Wan-iverse.
Yeah,
the Wan-iverse. In that, like, Annabelle is like a killer doll movie, but it's not really about a... like, there's like a demon attached to the doll. But I don't think it's like the doll isn't really running around killing people.
Right.
Or the boy, where there's is a doll, but it's complicated. This one is just an evil doll. It's just an evil robot doll.
Yeah, absolutely.
Back to the basics. Back to the roots.
Yeah, and it certainly like it doesn't feel like it's wasting any time. It feels self-aware, but not too self-aware. I don't know. It's remarkably fun.
I think it's just because it's really economical. I think it's just it takes a very you can tell what's gonna happen from fucking frame one of each character's introduction. You can tell if they're gonna die or not, if they're gonna almost die or not. You can tell probably even if you're smart, like coherent enough with these things, what order the characters are going to die in.
Yeah, right.
But it's economical of that, and that it's like it doesn't need to like explain concepts to you. It doesn't need to explain to you what a computer doll is. It's like, have you seen any movie about a doll or a computer that kills people in the last 30 years? Cool, we're caught up to speed.
We're gonna do one of those. We're just gonna do it a little bit better than they've been doing them.
It really is just kind of like a serve on that. Just like, I'm going to do that better. Shout outs to Akilah Cooper, also the writer for Malignant, which I loved, and Hellfest, which I hated.
I'm shocked that I loved Megan so much because I despised Malignant. I thought it was terrible. It's almost this effect of like having seen Megan, I'm a little bit more inoculated to the sense of humor behind a lot of what happens in Malignant, because it is a very funny movie. I'll give it that.
I think it probably helps because with Malignant, that was paired up with James Wan, whose films I would definitely qualify as like a specific side of camp, but it's not it's not necessarily the same matchup, whereas with Megan, it's, what's the director's name?
Gerard Johnstone.
Gerard Johnstone, who did Housebound, which is, like, more of a comedy horror in the same line that, like, Megan is. And so, like, it's clear that, like, the writing is, like, a better matchup there than, like, it was maybe with Malignant. And that also Malignant is like was more was like the it was like story by James Wan and his wife, so Akilah Cooper probably only had so much to say about it. It's a thing where I really like Akilah Cooper as a screenwriter so far, but Megan and Malignant are like share DNA, but like are ultimately still like pretty distinct enough that it's not that unusual that you would hate one and love the other.
Yeah. Absolutely, which is, you know, a testament to range, you know, a testament to kind of mastery of tone, I guess, that it's able, that these two things are able to be packaged so differently and feel so different from each other.
It also makes me kind of want to revisit Hellfest and see if maybe what I hated about it was, like, more directorial stuff, mm-hmm. because she wrote that, and I, like, feel like maybe rewatching it, there'll be some stuff about it that I enjoyed a lot more. But I didn't like it. I thought it was really I thought it was just really stupid and forgettable.
Are we gonna see The Nun 2? Her
I am gonna see The Nun 2. We'll get back to The Nun 2, but I am gonna see The Nun 2. Actually, you know what, this is a great thing about it. The other thing about Megan that works is that James Wan as the producer and Akilah Cooper as the writer both understand that horror is a very filmic genre, or horror films are a very filmic genre, and that it's very what makes good horror film comes down a lot to like imagery. Which means either a very iconic villain or like very iconic set pieces and like deaths.
Right. Yeah.
And I say that because The Nun fucking sucked. The Nun was like, and I feel like I never hear anyone talk about The Nun like it was a movie that they enjoyed, but people fucking love The Nun, the design of the evil character in it. Because it's a really good monster design. So people just kind of, like, keep that character around in like the larger horror consciousness. But I never hear people talk about The Nun as a movie. So I think getting Akilah Cooper on it for The Nun 2 is really smart. Because she's shown that she has a really good grasp on, like, what makes iconic horror villains, like, work.
Yeah, absolutely. And Megan, I mean, I don't know, I hate to be so aware and referential toward the sort of, let's call it the social media effect, but she is immediately, like, very iconic. She's immediately very, like, memeable and shareable, you know?
Yeah.
As much as those words feel like poison coming out of my mouth, she knew that people in the theater, well, she knew that people would go crazy for Megan doing a crazy little dance before murdering somebody. She knew that people in the theater would laugh their asses off if she sang like pop songs, essentially.
And badly. The decision to have her singing, like the decision to have her after killing a child, comforting the child that she killed the other child in front of, by saying like the least comforting things and then singing Bulletproof horribly off key is one of the funniest gags I've seen in a movie in a while.
Oh god, what was the fucking Titanium.
Yeah.
David Guetta featuring Sia. What an insane choice.
It's like the perfect grab of a song of just like when you put together what it is, you're like, oh my God, this fucking song? I haven't thought about that song in years.
A spiritual follow-up to the song that the girl sings in Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Yeah. I was just thinking, it's like, it reminded me a lot of like the ironically, much more upsetting scene of the girl singing Fireworks by Katy Perry and Killing of a Sacred Deer. I also love it because it also really works for, like, the villain to just be, like, just a little off kilter. Like, kind of understands, like, obviously, you know, oh, she's, like, it's very, like, single white female, like, character typing where it's, like, mothering instincts gone awry kind of stuff.
Right.
But to the even just, like, small details like that where it's just, it's, like, oh, even, like, her idea of, like, how to comfort a child is, like, insanely off base. But, like, just a little bit off, like, just a little bit off that it's, like, okay, that's, like, a really popular song. I guess I could see how, like, an AI would be, like, statistically, children love this song.
This is a highly searched song in the search engines.
Which really is just, like, what AI-based therapy is going to end up being when it's inevitably announced. It's just, like, oh, I'm sorry to hear you feel that way. Whenever I'm feeling bad, I always stream the latest Justin Bieber track.
I always buy the 5 for $5 meal at Wendy's. Wendy's, available nearby. Let's look up Wendy's in your area.
It's really important that when you're feeling bad, to set tasks for yourself that you can accomplish in order to feel better. May I suggest going on down to Skechers and checking out their latest supply of New Balances? Checking store availability, and it looks like they have some in your size that I think will go great.
Yeah. That feels very inevitable at this point. Some quick kind of other things about this movie. I'm just very happy to see Brian Jordan Alvarez in a major movie role.
Literally, I knew he was in this and still got jump scared when he showed up.
For anybody who happens to not be aware, which would be insane, but not unforgivable. Ryan Jordan Alvarez does a whole bunch of, just has the historic The Gay and Wondrous Life of Caleb Gallo, which is a great, great series. He has a bunch of movies with, like, Stephanie Koenig and a bunch of other really talented folks that are all pretty much free to watch on YouTube. He's awesome. He's great. It makes me so happy to see him. And yeah. He does a spectacular job of almost fucking dying, getting murdered by a doll.
It's, I feel like I like that, like, they cast him in one of the kind of comic relief sidekicky characters. Was nice to see like them both being a very restrained, like, version of those characters. Like, they're not just, like, going, like, well, that just happened, or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of like your coworkers who are doing the coworkers who are under the ideas guy or ideas gal in this case, and kind of probably doing most of the grunt work.
Right.
The great line delivery on the, like, line where it's like, well, how big is your neighbor? She's like 4 feet tall. Like, how could she have done that? She's like tiny.
Yeah. Some really fantastic kills in this movie. It definitely caused some kind of ripple through the audience, between, like, that horrifying kill of, really both the neighbor and the dog, but, ripping off the, like, child bully's ear and making him get run over by a car.
Yeah. Which, like, when, like, as I saw him get onto the road and the car approaching, I was just like, oh, okay, the kid's gonna get, like, really badly, like, injured or something, and it's gonna be, like, fucked up, but, like, you know, he'll blame the doll or something, and people will be like, it's a doll, I can't do that. But then it's just like, oh, no, he's fucking dead. Like, it just cuts back around, and there's just, like, a bloody smear left by the car screeching, like, 50 feet and, like, a single shoe. And you're just like, oh, fuck. That kid's, like, dead.
Smash cut to a body bag.
Very that one, like, I really liked it because it's like they do the bit I said before of like, I'm glad that they established the dog is an asshole so you don't feel bad when it gets killed. But it's just something like, yeah, we're gonna kill a dog, and if you thought that was the limit, we're also gonna kill a kid. Fuck you.
Speaking of the dog, one of the funniest and weirdest and like a part of the movie that I fully just don't understand is when the main character, oh god, whose name I'm fucking blanking on, Gemma.
Yeah.
Like, I think either her or her daughter, like, gets bit by the dog, and she's, like, urging the neighbor to, like, put the dog down. Like, you need to kill your dog, because I'm sick of hearing it's barking.
Yeah, she literally goes, you need to put your dog down, or I'll do it.
Which is, like, I don't know, great, like, script, funny sort of script thing to have her intonate that she's gonna kill a dog that gets killed. But who the fuck says that?
And then it cuts to her attempting to convince the cop to kill the dog. Which is, like, the funniest possible follow-up for that.
Can't you just take your gun and, like, just, you know, couple shots right between the eyes?
Come on. You're a cop. Like, you guys love doing this.
That is very Seattle, though. I guess I could believe it. That's, you know, people here. I've been on Nextdoor. I know what it's like out here.
It is insane still that they set this movie in Seattle and it doesn't fucking look like it. And
that's another thing I wanted to talk about.
They filmed it in New Zealand to go for that Denver feel, but it takes place in Seattle.
Like, what are you talking about? What do you mean?
What is that? Like, oh, we wanted it to have that Denver feel. Then why does it take place in Seattle?
I mean, I love that.
Denver has, like, a tech scene, I'm pretty sure.
I do love that. I love just being like, yeah, it makes more sense for it to take place here. But I want it to look like something, you know, I want to dress Seattle up in Denver clothes, you know. Even
but film it in New Zealand.
Even though it is New Zealand. And California, apparently.
That is so fun. I, like, didn't realize it was supposed to be Seattle until, like, the very end of the film. Yeah. It just doesn't fucking look like Seattle.
Not at all, no. I mean, like, maybe some parts of Bellevue on a good day, but I don't know.
It's especially because it's like, it doesn't even look like movie Seattle. Like, this doesn't look like Malignant. This doesn't look like, oh god, what's that other single? The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Another film where it's like, it's like, oh, it takes place in Seattle, but it's like, greater Seattle area, and it's like obvious most of it's not filmed in Seattle, but it doesn't even look like movie Seattle.
Yeah, no, it's no place I've ever been. It's the street in Edward Scissorhands. It's I don't know. It's,
yeah,
it's a bit much.
It's wherever tech lesbians live.
Yeah, their secret island off in some, you know, some distant land that we've never heard about. Which kind of, you know, kind of sounds like New Zealand. The other thing kind of at the heart of this movie is that I think it did a good job of, you know, I don't want to be too complimentary about the movie. Like, it's like a fun little thing. But it did have some interesting things to say about the sort of, like, codependent relationship that immediately sort of arises between Katie, who I guess is the young child, and Megan, and how she kind of becomes this horrible little brat.
Yeah. She becomes, like, literally addicted.
Yeah, like, way, way, way too attached.
I feel like this is probably one of the better entries I've seen in the It's Because You Be On That Damn Phone genre of film.
Yeah.
Which I was, like, a little worried about when they were first introducing the whole, like, screen time thing, where it's like, oh, okay, it's gonna be one of those, like, those kinds of movies. But it shows, like, an actual understanding of, like, the fact that the tech industry is evil and preys on children's developing brains to get them addicted to things.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, straight up, like, a scene of, like, a child psychologist being, like, So, like, you know about, like, attachment theory, right? Like, you know that, like, this is like, an extremely unhealthy bond for a child to form with, like, what is essentially a toy. And her just being, like, reacting like, oh, we've actually never had a child psychologist tell us anything about her toys.
Oh, shit. We forgot to do that R&D. We forgot to test our shit.
We were so focused on making Furbies that shit smaller and faster that we never thought about the, like, hey, is this going to make your child insane?
God. Okay, the fucking commercial at the very beginning of the movie was so good.
So bold to just cold open your film on the most pitch perfect, like, parody of, like, modern kids toy commercials.
Yeah, it felt a little like Cinco, Tim and Eric type of thing, but more like trying to be a little bit more real than that. But oh my god, the shitting Furbies. What a genius touch. And also the design of them was, like, spectacular. The horrible, horrible teeth was so funny.
I love the decision to make the toy that is not even a villain in the film. Just be, like, an upsetting to look at toy.
Completely horrible. We have this child character, Katie, who, you know, is dealing with all of this, like, over-attachment and has, like, this, you know, very psychological journey. And kind of something similar with Gemma, where she has to suddenly... Gemma is this kind of, like, fail woman who, like...
She's a femcel. Like, she's a femcel.
Yeah, absolutely. And she has all these, like, collectible toys that, you know, I mean, the scene where with the child psychologist where she's like, well, actually, that's not really how you play it. Like, it's not a ball, you know.
Okay, we'll just roll it back and forth like a tennis ball.
It's
just
a stupid fucking ball.
Pitch for perfect writing and, like, line delivery and just, like, body acting in that whole sequence of just, like, being torn between, like, knowing that she should be doing a better job with Katie, but also being like, but that's my stuff. But it's my thing.
But it's mine. I don't want to open it.
Just the boldness to give us a woman who actually sucks. I feel like in so many of these things, the woman who's struggling with motherhood, I just don't know how to be a mother to them. And then, like, nothing in the film indicates that they're actually struggling with that. They just say that they are, and their kid is going through, like, normal child things.
Yeah.
But in this one, it's like, oh, no, she actually is, like, extremely ill-fit to take care of this kid. She actually has to learn what prioritizing another living human being is like, because she's never had to do that before.
Yeah, absolutely. And you really do watch her, like, struggle and stumble over this, you know, this big new thing in her life.
Also great, because they even, like kind of forecast that a little bit with, like, the opening scene of just, like, part, like, some of the establishing dialogue just being the parents bickering and specifically complaining about her. Like, why did she give our child such an annoying toy? And then being like, oh, come on, it's really expensive. And it's like, she works at the factory. Like, it's probably, like, free for her.
Yeah. That's some good little character development right there before we actually meet her. I will say, I kind of thought the parents dying scene was, like, a little bit cliched. Let's be real.
Yeah.
But it's
like I said, it the film hits all the beats and trips you would expect a film like this to hit.
Yeah, it's a little forgivable just because it's like, it, you know, you're past it pretty quickly, and it's just like, oh yeah, this makes sense that this would be the scene, that the shot you've seen a million zillion times of headlights, you know, coming toward a car, would happen. Her parents die tragically.
Yeah, no, they're just telegraphing it the whole time. They're like, you know what happens.
you know what's going on here.
To have it end on a punchline was pretty bold, though, of the dad being like, oh, I guess we'll just fucking wait here for a snowplow to show up, and then just snowplow. Apparently, the detective, from what I was being told, is, like, also, like, one of the, like, a kind of, like, online... Not the detective. The detective who has, like, a, like, basically, like, one scene. Where the one who has the really great line delivery of, like... Of, like, oh, you were also at that murder. It's like, I'm a suspect? Suspect. No, we found his ear torn clean off, like, a couple yards away from where he was. I shouldn't laugh. The kid's dead. great delivery. That guy's apparently also, like, an online comedian.
Millen Baird.
Yep, police detective. Yeah. It's always fun to see these kind of movies, them using them as a way to be like, all right, we're gonna draw from like kind of, oh, he was also in Housebound. That's cool.
Oh, cool.
It's always fun to see them kind of draw on from like other wells of talent and influence. That's the thing that like the Search Party and like Brian Jordan Alvarez like crew all kind of do is there's very much so like chaining each other up or not chaining each other up. Monkey chain? What is that thing? The barrel of monkeys thing.
Oh yeah.
That kind of thing where it's like daisy chaining. There it is. Daisy chaining each other into like jobs and careers and stuff. It's cool.
Yeah.
This movie could have used a Connor O'Malley jump scare as well. But so far that only has gone to bodies, bodies, bodies. So
yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, just put Connor O'Malley in everything. Just have him show up and
always at the end. He should always walk in at the end.
At the very, very end of the film. Connor O'Malley should have played the other robot that fights Megan.
That would have been really funny if in that scene that robot can talk. And it's just clearly Connor O'Malley's voice.
Oh my fucking god.
Hell yeah! AI pimps! I gotta say, like, in terms of technical stuff, really good job in the, like, filming of making Megan look like a robot doll that occasionally moves like a person. Yeah. And so kind of basically doing it where it's like, if it's a shot that can be accomplished with like a mannequin kind of thing, they definitely would do that. But like giving her human like movements every now and then, which kind of made her like more creepy.
Right.
Cause they play with that a lot too, where it's like people think that she's like a real girl and then they look a little bit closer and they're like, ah, what an iconic kills. The scene of her in the fucking little petticoat in the woods.
Yeah, she was, her outfits were so gorgeous, and I think that's such an important part of this movie, is, like, if she did not look so cunty, like, would it have been half as good? Probably not. The styling is just fantastic.
Also, I think it does a really good job of, like, Megan's like when she wants to come off as like non-predatory, she defaults into more of an unnatural voice.
Yeah.
Which is like a really good touch. Like I think that's like a really clever thing is that when she does that, she's like, "What? I'm just a toy. You can turn me off. I can't kill anybody." But then when she's like being way more like just threatening someone, she's like, oh, I can totally talk like a normal person, actually.
I actually sound like a human, just so you know. That was definitely a very interesting touch. Like, it made her... And I mean, the whole kind of showdown scene between her and Gemma, where they're trying to convince the young girl, Katie,
to not come in, yeah.
Like, you see a lot of... You know, you see a lot of humanity kind of come through all of a sudden. And suddenly she doesn't really get to pretend that, you know, she's this, like, subject anymore. She's, you know, she's kind of in charge of the dynamic now.
I like that it all just starts with, like, oops, we taught a computer about death. You'll never believe what happens next.
And I don't know what to make of the, like, Alexa cliffhanger at the end, but... I guess we'll find out in Megan 2.0 coming 2025. Yeah, and
they're definitely making it. I mean, I feel like that's like a weird like red herring for the sequel. Like that's a thing that you can end on for the woo
right
thing. But I think it's actually going to be that the copy of her that the dude downloaded, because that felt like a whole subplot that got like pared down a lot, was that like he was the one doing espionage for like the other company, and then they just kind of like roughly are like, no, he was just doing it for fun.
Yeah, that's true. I almost forgot about that character completely.
Yeah, no, he definitely feels like something where like of leftover from a version of a script that they had to cut down for maybe because of the rating issues, maybe because of like they just were like, oh, we want this to be a clean hour 30 minutes like film.
Yeah.
But yeah, that feels like where the sequel potential comes from, is that there is a copy of Megan's sort of rough AI shape that is floating out there that could be picked up and stolen by another company.
Yeah. That's interesting. We'll have to keep our eye out for when the sequel drops. I don't know how interested I am in a sequel, honestly. I feel like this was really...
I will always go and see a bad sequel. Yeah. Speaking of, I really hope they actually do the third escape room.
Oh my god. I didn't know they made a second one.
They did. I went and saw it in theaters.
Oh, well, how was that?
Better than the first one. Not very good. It's still not very good.
All right. Well, I'll make sure not to watch that ever at your recommendation. Yeah.
That's fair. I'll still go see it. Listen, I'm so hungry for good Saw content that I'll even take bad Saw content.
Very fair, very fair. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that this film kind of opened your eyes to new options, new technologies, new things kind of coming down the technological pipeline.
Yeah, no, and I mean, to be fair, also doing this kind of reminded me that, like, man, fuck a computer. Like,
yeah,
I actually don't want computers to talk to. I think they should make TVs stupider.
Oh yeah, we should.
They should make computers stupider. My phone should be really, really dumb. Is really what I want out of this.
Well, you know, I don't know, there's maybe no closing Pandora's box. We're in the era of the brand clapback, where Steakums gets to turn and look at the camera and reply to you specifically.
And say, smash capitalism.
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy that I'm saying this and I'm the Steakums account?
Wow.
That's right, viewer. I may be Otter Pops, but I'm just like you. I get horny and or depressed.
I may be
one of my fucking favorite bits from I think it's Bradford Evans. Is their fake like we're Twitter brands, and just like it ending on a bit of like, he's doing like a urinal cake. So he's like, oh, I'm so depressed from jacking off that I think I'm gonna kill myself. And the other guy's like, as the social media manager for Otter Pops, I saw this as a great moment to have a conversation about mental health. So I replied, do it. And as the urinal cakes, I replied, the social media manager of urinal cakes has killed himself because Otter Pops told him to do it. Please buy a case of urinal cakes in his memory.
Jesus.
And then they're just like, they just do this bit where it's like, and I think the results like speak for themselves. And it's like, 0.5% increase in like stock sales. No, that's a great bit. I recommend looking it up. I'm gonna double check real quick that it is in fact Bradford Evans. But then you can just look at it, put it in the notes. We'll look at just look up Bradford Evans brands. It is not Bradford Evans. Cut that whole bit.
Okay. All right.
I, I am not going to listen. There are too many comedians on Twitter whose names are just like Steve left. Like, I can't fucking keep any of you guys straight.
No.
Is it Ryan? Is one of them a Ryan? Too many Ryans. There's too many Ryans on Twitter.
Yeah, there's very many Ryans. There's a lot of Ryans out there.
They got to cut it out.
No more Ryans.
Oh, actually put it in. It is Bradford Evans, but it's his display name is Brad Evans.
Oh, okay.
So search that and his Twitter for brands, or sorry, corporate social media managers is the name of the skit.
Very nice. It stays in. It stays in the picture. Stays in. Well, thanks for coming in today, Jay Bear Hat. I hate to reveal this at such a late juncture.
Yeah.
But you have been speaking to an artificial intelligence this whole time. That's right.
Oh, that actually makes a lot of sense.
I am an artificial intelligence version of Beru. While I have many critiques of capitalism in my life, I ultimately love capitalism.
Well, that's funny because I am actually also an AI that has been programmed to be sound like Jay Bear Hat. And that's why I'm here to tell you today that the state may cause problems, but the solution is to get out there and vote.
That is so true.
Especially for the Democratic Party.
Wow. Or the Republican Party, if you are so inclined.
Both choices are valid. Voting is a valid response to the conditions that we all find ourselves in.
You are valid. You are loved. Remember to eat Wheaties.
This is just going to be the new version of the, like, what would you tweet if you were a hostage? If you were in a hostage situation. It's like, what would you tweet if an AI took over your account?
Probably something like, I don't want to kill myself.
I actually hate Streaming Dirt by Kendall.
That's it. There it is. That's what it would be. All right. All right.
Evil AI Beru be like, goodbye.
Evil AI Beru be like, clean.